Chapter 3. Hoping for Rescue. Slowly, the land arose from the sea. From a black line, it became a line of black and a line of white, trees and sand. Finally, the captain said that he could make out a house on the shore.
"That's the house of refuge," said the cook. "They'll see us before long and come out after us."
The distant lighthouse reared high.
"The keeper ought to be able to make us out now if he's looking through a glass," said the captain. "He'll tell the life-saving people."
"None of those other boats could have got on shore to give word of the wreck," said the oiler in a low voice. "Otherwise, the lifeboat would be out hunting for us."
Slowly and beautifully, the land appeared out of the sea. The wind came again. It had changed directions from the northeast to the southeast. Finally, a new sound struck the men's ears. It was the low roar of the surf on the shore.
"We'll never be able to make the lighthouse now. Swing her head a little more north, Billy," said the captain.
"A little more north, sir," said the oiler.
The little boat turned her nose once more down the wind, and all but the oarsmen watched the shore grow. Under the influence of this expansion, doubt and worry were leaving the minds of the men. The management of the boat was still the priority, but it could not prevent a quiet happiness. In an hour, perhaps, they would be on shore. Their backs had become thoroughly used to balancing in the boat, and they now rowed this wild dinghy like circus men. The correspondent thought that he had been drenched to the skin, but happening to feel in the top pocket of his coat, he found 8 cigars. 4 of them were wet with seawater. 4 were perfectly untouched. After a search, somebody produced 3 dry matches. From them, the 4 thin men rowed in their little boat with an assurance of impending rescue shining in their eyes. They smoked the big cigars and judged well and ill of all men. Everybody took a drink of water.
"Cook," remarked the captain, "there don't seem to be any signs of life about your house of refuge."
"No," replied the cook. "Funny they don't see us."
A broad stretch of low coast lay before their eyes. It was of low dunes with dark plant life on top. The roar of the surf was plain, and sometimes they could see the white lip of a wave as it hit the beach. A tiny house was black upon the sky. Southward, the narrow lighthouse lifted itself higher. Tide, wind, and waves were swinging the dinghy northward.
"Funny they don't see us," said the men.
The surf's roar became softer, but its tone was, nevertheless, powerful. As the boat swam over the great waves, the men sat listening to this roar.
"We'll turn over for sure," said everybody.
It is fair to say here that there was not a life-saving station within 20 miles in either direction. But the men did not know this fact, and in consequence, they made dark and critical remarks concerning the vision of the nation's lifesavers. 4 angry men sat in the dinghy and beat records in the invention of epithets.
"Funny they don't see us."
The lighthearted manner of the former time had completely faded. To their sharpened minds, it was easy to imagine pictures of all kinds of stupidity, blindness, and indeed cowardice. There was the shore of the populated land, and it was bitter to these men that no sign came from it.
"Well," the captain ultimately said, "I suppose we'll have to try for ourselves. If we stay out here too long, none of us will have strength left to swim after the boat turns over."
And so the oiler, who was at the oars, turned the boat straight for the shore. There was a sudden tightening of muscles. There was some thinking.
"If we don't all get on shore," said the captain, "if we don't all get on shore, I suppose you fellows know where to send news of my finish."
They then each briefly exchanged some addresses and warnings. As for the personal thoughts of the men, there was a great deal of rage in them. Perhaps each one of them might be thinking,
"If I am going to drown, if I am going to drown, why, in the name of the 7 mad gods who rule the sea, was I allowed to come so far and contemplate sand and trees?
Was I brought here merely to have my nose dragged away as I was about to bite the cheese of life? It is ridiculous. If this old scared woman, fate, cannot do better than this, she should not be allowed the management of men's lives. She is an old chicken who doesn't know what she wants. If she has decided to drown me, why did she not do it in the beginning and save me all this trouble? The whole affair is crazy. But no, she cannot mean to drown me. She dare not drown me. She cannot drown me. Not after all this work.
Then a man might have had a desire to shake his hand at the clouds.
Just you drown me now, and then hear what I call you.
The waves that came at this time were more powerful. They seemed always just about to break and roll over the little boat in a storm of foam. Those unfamiliar with the sea would have never thought that the dinghy could overcome these great heights in time. The shore was still far. The oiler was a clever surf man.
"Boys," he said swiftly, "she won't live 3 minutes more, and we're too far out to swim. Shall I take her to sea again, Captain?"
"Yes, go ahead," said the captain.
This oiler, by a string of quick miracles and fast and steady ability, turned the boat in the middle of the surf and took her safely to sea again. There was a considerable silence as the boat moved over the waves to deeper water. Then somebody sadly spoke.
"Well, in any case, they must have seen us from the shore by now."
The gulls went in flight up the wind toward the gray empty east. A violent wind, marked by dingy clouds, and clouds brick red, like smoke from a burning building, appeared from the southeast.
"What do you think of those life-saving people? Aren't they sweet?"
"Funny they haven't seen us."
"Maybe they think we're out here for sport. Maybe they think we're fishing. Maybe they think we're damn fools."